Welcome to Work Matters. I'm Nan Russell. You know, here on Work Matters, we believe that your work is about living your life's potential. And our job here is just to help you get wherever you want to go. So sometimes that means we're a little bit coach. Sometimes we're a little bit motivation or inspiration. Sometimes we might even be a little bit nudge. But all the time here on Work Matters, you can count on one thing, always real world. We bring you real world insights, real world guests, real world perspectives to help you be winning at working, creating the career and the life that you want, running a great business, doing what you want to do in your life and your work. And, you know, today we're talking about this other concept at work that just is plaguing the news. And no, it's not about unemployment issues. It's about what's happening to people who are employed. And that is that there is this huge amount of disengagement at work. And we know from some recent Gallup polling that that disengagement from employees who are perceived by the Gallup polling organization to be what are called actively disengaged can cost employers up to $416 billion in lost productivity. And certainly at a time like this, we can't afford as a country to have a loss of engagement. So we are talking about what that looks like, what it is, what we can do about it today on the show. And we're starting the show with that concept as well. My colleague and friend Beth Palkowski and I are discussing employee engagement in our segment called Uncommon Sense, coming up in just a couple of minutes. Following that, I want to share with you some things that are in my e-box, some things that crossed my desk this week that maybe you missed. And then coming up after that, so coming up about midway in the show, my guest today is Roxanne Emmerich, and she is the best-selling author of Thank God It's Monday, How to Create a Work Place You and Your Customers Love. So we are going to be talking about exactly that. How do we create workplaces that work? How do we create and build back the engagement in our staffs, in ourselves, in our workplaces? So following my conversation with Roxanne, I'm going to share with you some of my own ideas, having spent 20 plus years in the corporate arena and now do a lot of consulting and speaking and have a lot of clients who are asking exactly these questions. How do we build back the engagement? I will be sharing with you some of my thoughts on employee engagement in our last section. Now, before we kind of jump into the topic and I welcome my colleague Beth Palkowski to the show, I just want to tell you about some very recent statistics on employee engagement that kind of set the tone for all of this. And this is new out of Gallup, and it talks about the fact that it's not enough to just say, you know, 70% of employees are disengaged these days at work. There are different categories of engagement, and they really are talking about actively disengaged employees are those who, you know, are pretty much fed up. They have a lot of negativity. They're looking to jump ship quickly, and they can do a lot of damage to a particular culture. But what they found in their most recent study is that there is an age difference that we need to pay attention to about who is most disengaged. And what they found is that the highest percentage of actively disengaged employees is between 40 and 49, between 40 and 49. The early adult employee from 18 to 29 and those over 60 all had much higher engagement rates. And their finding also said that this category of actively disengaged from 40 to 49 basically were saying that they did not feel that their workplace provided them any source of personal development. So I think it's an important thing for us to pay attention to as we look at this very important topic of employee engagement, what we can do about it, and how we can make things work at work. As always, you can find out lots more information here about the show on the show's website, which is workmatterswithnan.com. That's workmatterswithnan.com. We post the links to the things that we talk about. We also have a lot of resources there for you as well. You can even download a copy of my first book, Nibble Your Way to Success. It's a free copy for listeners of Work Matters. So go to workmatterswithnan.com, check it out, enter some contests, look at the tips and resources that are there at workmatterswithnan.com. We're now to the segment that we do oftentimes in the show called Uncommon Sense. It's a place where we talk about all sorts of things. Sometimes we take listener questions. Sometimes we talk about articles that cross our desk. Sometimes we talk about trends or issues that we've seen. And when I talk about we, I'm referring to my friend and colleague, Beth Pelkovsky, who brings her experience and background to the dialogue as well. And I'd like to welcome Beth back to the show. Hi, Beth. How are you?
I'm good, Nan. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thanks. And I know this week you sent me an article, and it looks sort of interesting to talk about in terms of engagement. So why don't you bring us up to speed a little bit, and we'll dive in.
Okay. This particular article comes from Human Resource Executive Online. It's an online magazine. And the title of the article was Engagement Through a New Lens. I guess I was kind of drawn to the article a little bit because engagement certainly is a hot topic and has been for some time about how really to engage employees and what that looks like, especially when there's so many people who are unhappy or not satisfied in their job. And I think, you know, HR leaders and managers certainly are looking at that and trying to figure out, you know, where their own responsibility lies. This article happens to be from Susan Messenger, who is a former president and CEO of SHRM, and currently she is an author and a speaker or whatever. And I just thought she had an interesting take on engagement from the standpoint of, you know, it's not cookie cutter.
Right, right.
And that's certainly not necessarily new news, but I think especially in larger companies where you have many employees, the program tends to be kind of, you know, rolled out for everyone, and there's really not a whole lot of consideration about what the differences are in terms of what motivates people and what helps them be engaged. It's more like, okay, you know, this is our program.
Right. And, you know, that was one of the reasons I thought it would be interesting to talk about a little bit here from two vantage points. One is we know that the Gallup polling continues to say that about 70% of employees in the United States are disengaged at work. And I was speaking at an event not long ago, and someone asked me the question, which I had never had before, which was, well, what does that really mean that they're disengaged at work? And so we sort of talked about that, but and what that looked like, and this whole sense of it doesn't mean that you aren't doing the job that you were hired to do. You might be doing the job just fine, but you're not having that extra discretionary input. You are not utilizing the ideas that come into your brain. You're not giving them to people. Non-engaged employees have really just said, you know, I'm just going to come and do this, and that's it. And the ideas and the intellectual property that companies need to make this happen is what's so critical in many industries. And this article raises, I think, a couple of points because of the fact that a lot of organizations have said, oh, we have to have engaged employees. They've done exactly what you said. They did the cookie cutter approach of saying, now we're going to have like these engagement programs. And one of the things this really raised for me is, you know, who's responsible anyway? And I would argue, and I would definitely take the side of debating, that as individuals, you know, it's ultimately our life. And if we're not engaged at work, then we either should be finding new work or we should be helping ourselves become engaged. And there's a lot of ways to do that. I mean, yes, a company has some responsibility, but so do we.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I think for a long time, that question or that point is not even part of the conversation.
No.
I think it's an argument that says if you you don't have employee engagement, then what do you, as a management team, as the leadership team, whatever, you know, what do you need to do about it? And so, you know, the fact that employees and people have certainly a large responsibility in that is really not part of the conversation.
Right. There's this whole thing that's going on, I think, in a lot of organizations where I guess it mirrors society right now, where there's just a lot of finger pointing, where somebody else is responsible for what it is that's going wrong. And one of the things that is going wrong in a lot of organizations has to do with this lack of engagement. But the finger pointing isn't really helping because, I mean, I've worked in a lot of organizations where the culture and the environment was not particularly a conducive one to have employee engagement. And yet you found pockets of excellence and you found people really engaged in what they were doing because they really saw it in a different light. And, you know, I think sometimes we have to step back and recognize that this is not, you know, this is not a parental environment. We can't let somebody else just be there to fix it. And to this article's point, what works for you and what works for me could be totally different.
Exactly. And I thought Susan did, it was interesting, I thought in the article that she mentioned a recent book by Dave and Wendy Ulrich, which is called The Why of Work, How Great Leaders Build Abundant Organizations That Win. Again, she was looking at the side of, okay, what is the responsibility of a company mm-hmm. in order to promote, certainly, employee engagement. But I thought it was interesting that, you know, they were taking more of a spiritual kind of look and perspective at this rather than maybe like the tactical type of thing. And they suggested that there were, you know, 7 questions around the work that leaders should be asking themselves and then further down the line really asking each of their employees about things that were beyond, say, like the basics of necessarily, you know, the job in the sense of, you know, how do I change? Here's one, like, how do I change, learn, and grow? What challenges interest me? You know, and answering, having people answer some of those questions in order to build that type of environment.
And also build the type of environment, you know, where we all need to have some sense of meaning and purpose in what it is that we do. And I thought those questions were good as well to help people start to think about things beyond their tasks in the sense of also who they are and what they want to contribute and how they want to really make a difference in the work that they do. So I would encourage people to check out this article. We'll have it posted, maybe to check out the book. But to really think about engagement as a two-sided part of the coin and the piece being that we all are individual and not to cookie cut, I think, is the big message that we'd like to leave you with.
Yeah, and I think it's that whole, you really need to look at yourself and look inside before you're looking, you know, and understand that before you're looking outside for, you know, somebody who's responsible.
Definitely. And we would just like to encourage you to send us articles, send us input, send us comments, send us questions. We love to talk about whatever you like us to talk about here on our segment on Common Sense. And you can do that one of two ways. Go to our website, workmatterswithnan.com. That's workmatterswithnan.com. Or give us a call. You can leave a message at 866-944-8195. Again, that toll-free number, 866-944-8195. As always, Beth, it's a pleasure to talk to you here on Work Matters and this segment on Common Sense. I hope you have a great week, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
You do the same, Nan. Bye.
Stay tuned for more Work Matters. We'll be right back. You are listening to Web Talk Radio Network. You can find it at www.webtalkradio.net. Web Talk Radio Network is distributed by Matrix Media, a Chicago-based talk radio firm. Go to www.webtalkradio.net to learn more about Web Talk Radio. We'll be right back. welcome to my e-box. This is a time when I share with you some of the things that came my way during the week. Sometimes I find them when I'm out on Twitter. And by the way, you can certainly find my Twitter feed if you go to Nan_Russell. I tweet pretty frequently about some of the things that are happening in workplace issues and tips about how you can be winning at working. But I find all sorts of things on the internet. People send me articles, and I love to get articles. I love to get information, so send it my way. You can do that at workmatterswithnan.com. Go to that site, and you can find out how to get information directly to us. I wanted to talk about three things that hit my e-box this week, and the first one is most disturbing, at least it was to me. It's an article that was on Huffington Post, and the title of the article says, "Disturbing Job Ads, The Unemployed Will Not Be Considered." And it goes on to talk about some recent job postings, some recent job advertisements, some recent trends where companies that are looking to hire people are actually putting in the ad the fact that no unemployed candidates will be considered at all. There's a number of levels where this hits me. One is from a consumer standpoint that says, why would I want to do business with a company that was so foolish to just blanketly say that everyone who lost their job in the recession, most people, no fault of their own, entire companies closed, entire divisions closed, entire job functions were eliminated, no fault of their own. Why would I want to do business with a company that is blanketly just tossing those people aside? So that's number one. And number two is, if I worked at a company like that and I saw that in an ad or I heard about it, that would be one of those non-engagement issues, because if they don't see the value of people, as individuals, well, what does that say about those who are employed there? So I think this is a significant issue and hopefully not an ongoing trend. The second thing that was very interesting that was in my e-box this week, this is in a recent Newsweek magazine, and the article is called How to Build Again, and it talks about some misconceptions about the whole idea of manufacturing jobs. And one of the misconceptions that's out there is that the U.S. is really not as competitive as we might think we are, because a lot of these jobs are going to other countries. And this says that's not true at all. In fact, the United States is number fourth in the world competing for manufacturing jobs, despite the high cost of our labor, because of two things. One, the fact that our talent is so terrific and so highly skilled. And number two, that innovation is critical in manufacturing, and it's going to be more and more critical. And the United States is very innovative in the way that we, our employees, have creative ideas and think. And that's one of the things that's so important for engagement, is having the kind of environment where people freely give their ideas and are engaged at work is one of those things that will continue to make us a leader in manufacturing jobs. Right now, we rank fourth, following China, India, and South Korea. And the final thing in my e-box that I wanted to mention has to do with an interesting thing. Now, the Newsweek article that I just referenced also talked about this, and that is that there is going to be a talent shortage in the 21st century. And the next article, research that comes from Georgetown University, also predicts that there's going to be a shortage by 2018. Now, here's the key operative word: a shortage of educated workers. Now, we've talked about this before. There's been more information about the fact that there are jobs that are going unfilled because there are not individuals that have the education or the skill level to do them, because those jobs are getting much more complex. And this says that as well, that there'll be a 3 million employee shortage by 2018 of qualified employees, positions that require post-secondary education, as well as a lot of the technical fields that require specific skills. So something to pay attention to for those of us who run businesses and for those of us who are employed in businesses, keeping our skills current, keeping our skills enhanced, keeping our skills developed are going to help us ensure that we are going to be the people who get the best jobs for the future. So coming up next, my guest, Roxanne Emmerich, is joining me, and we're talking about her new book, Thank God It's Monday, How to Create a Workplace You and Your Customers Love. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. It's rough out there, whether you're looking for a job or have one. I'm Nan Russell, author of Hitting Your Stride, Your Work, Your Way. And I know what it's like to lose your job or feel frustrated at work. Work should feel easy and natural, like you're hitting your stride. Find out how to make your work or your job search feel like that. Check out my latest book, Hitting Your Stride, Your Work, Your Way.
Hitting Your Stride, Your Work, Your Way is available now at Amazon.com and all major bookstores.
When we live in a time where Gallup reports more people trust used car salesmen and infomercials than organizational leaders, how do you create a workplace that reignites the passion and inspires results? Well, our next guest is here to help. Roxanne Emmerich is the best-selling author of Thank God It's Monday, How to Create a Workplace You and Your Customers Love. She's also America's most sought-after workplace transformational expert, one of the most requested speakers in the country, and president and CEO of Emmerich Group. Roxanne, welcome to Work Matters. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
I'm thrilled to be here.
So let's just talk about some basics. You know, it is tough out there, and you don't hear very many people. I don't know that I've ever heard anyone say, thank God it's Monday. So what's a leader to do? Because a lot of the leaders aren't saying, thank God it's Monday either.
Well, that's the problem, and it's killing the people who are in the organization, and it's killing the organization. So 61% of employees who had jobs last year actively looked for new jobs, costing one of every three payroll dollars, according to Gallup. And the most frightening thing of all is that people's hearts, minds, and souls are just being stomped on because they're miserable at work, and therefore they bring that misery home. And that's why I wrote Thank God It's Monday, was to help people understand that there are sane workplaces that can build you up and make you feel great, and you can be a part of the shift.
Okay, but let's say right now you're not in one of those sane workplaces. You're in a place where you need to feel like you have your head down and you're just trying to do your work and you're disengaged. Is there something you as the individual employee can do about it, or is it really just for our bosses to figure out?
Well, I believe leadership is not just a position, it's a way of being. And so I've watched receptionists turn this thing around. I've seen all kinds of miracles. I started out of college as a commercial lender making loans to businesses. And one of the things I quickly discovered was I never had to look at the financials to know how the company was doing. All I had to do was listen to the language for about 3 minutes, and I could tell exactly the financials of the company. Because in our language, we're very revealing, and so you have the cultures where people are the try people. I'm going to try and see if I can get that report to you by Tuesday. You have the victim people who, you know, are always blaming. It's always a we, they kind of thing. It's always some other department. It's the economy. You know, it's something else outside of themselves. There are the gossipers who are putting down management all the time as opposed to sitting down and saying, how can we get together and make this work? And a million other little archetypal things that come into the language that reveals everything. So first of all, start with your language, and then you can go next into how to coach other people how to have better language so it doesn't feel like adult daycare all around you.
One of the things that I hear you talking about, and most of us have been in those kinds of toxic workplaces, or we've been associated with people who have, and we hear that kind of language, we're able to identify it more than maybe the person who's saying it. But if we look at some of the challenges that people face and we are asking them to change their language, I think being a cynic for my listeners right now, I'd say, yeah, that's great, but so what? So what else can we do besides the way we think about it? Are there specific things that we can do so we're not so fed up, so we, or should we just go find another place to work?
Well, here's
the problem with going to find another place to work is when you look at the statistics of how many people are unhappy with their work, there is no out there left to go to.
Right.
And out of the frying pan into the fire for most people who think that they're needing to move to get create a better situation. So for the last 20 years, I've been helping organizations make the shift, and we do this one-day event called a Kick Butt Kickoff. And we've had companies that hadn't grown more than 2% a year for 10 years in a row that grew 35% annualized within 30 days. We've had Community Bank that was in trouble with FDIC, and they were told they had to lay off a third of their people, who within a couple weeks after that, their customers are rolling in saying, I don't know what happened here. It's an amazing place. And the regulators came back a year later saying, well, I'm really glad you didn't listen to us because this place is thriving and going great. Stories go on and on and on that a culture shift can be that fast, especially if you get everyone engaged at the same time. So what we can do now is we can talk about how you get everyone engaged at the same time, but I also want to talk a little bit about, you know, what if you're the Lone Ranger and you're the only person who gets it? How do you get the people around you to get it as well?
Let's talk about this whole magic potion of the one-day kickoff, because having been in corporate America for a long time myself in a lot of different roles, the whole thought of being able to transform a culture in a day is intriguing at best. So help us understand.
Well, I'm sure most people go, yeah, right.
Exactly.
And I would too, except for I've been doing it for 20 years, and we time after time, the CEO comes up afterwards and says, that's a miracle. And people line up afterwards crying, saying, I've hated working here for 18 years, and I can't wait to go to work tomorrow. And what has to shift, and what we do in this one-day process, and that's why I wrote the book, was I can't do enough kickoffs to get all over the world to make this happen. I wanted to have people understand some of the basics behind it so they could start to apply these principles in their organization. But essentially, it starts with changing the language and getting people to make commitments. Commitments about how they'll treat their customers, commitments of the extraordinary future that they're going to agree to go into, and commitments about how they'll treat each other, which is really where the magic begins to happen, because that's where most of the dysfunction is within the organization. And if you have a large amount of dysfunction, you have very insignificant results. There is a huge correlation between those two. So that's the first place to start, I think, is cleaning up the dysfunction, and that miraculously can be fixed in a day.
So this whole issue that you hear right now, disguised in a lot of different headlines when we talk about greed and misdeeds of corporate executives, and we talk about the disengagement of employees and a lot of the things that are going on, and there is this kind of new currency of trust that's out there and starting to be looked at in different ways. But I want to talk about that in relationship to what you're saying about commitments and language changing, because trust isn't built in a day, and yet it sounds like what you're saying is there's some way that it started to be reignited in some of this kickoff, let's refocus our energies approach. Is that what you're saying?
Saying that, and I'm saying it in a way that first, to build that trust back, man, first of all, you have to say to the whole team together, okay, if you think, gosh, I hope Joe was listening, you're missing the point. At this point, your first job is to forget everything that's happened in the past, because that you can't do a thing about, and we've all made mistakes, and we've all been the jerk. So let's just let go of that one. But let's make some commitments about how we're going to treat each other. So let's start off with a commitment of no gossip. And so from now on, if somebody comes up to you and they start to gossip, you have a responsibility to say, sounds like you need to go speak directly to Joe. Please don't have me in the middle of this, but please let me know that you've gotten over there and got that taken care of, so that people begin to understand that we will no longer listen to the gossip, and then people begin to stop doing the gossip, and then suddenly people feel much more sane, because when you have gossip in a workplace, you know, you may as well bring baseball bats and beat the heck out of each other, because it's the worst form of workplace violence you could possibly have, and people get really hurt. And what I try to do in this book is to give people skills so that they can know how to deal with the people around them and help the people around them grow up to a higher level of maturity to put their big boy pants and their big girl pants on and come to work with their joy, as opposed to coming in beat up every day by each other.
It's interesting, because obviously if you're doing it from a group commitment, you encourage each other and help each other. But let's go to that other point you were making, which is, all right, you're the lone person out there and you really know it can be better, but you're not sure how to go about doing that. Is there something about being a rebel and making it happen, or is it about living in a certain way and to being a model and a mirror for other people?
Well, it's a rebel, but it's a nice rebel.
Okay.
I'm always coaching people, listen, the way to handle it is not to go get uptight and get angry with people and start throwing things around. That doesn't get the job done. What gets the job done is to sit down with people and ask for what you need in very specific ways, and so that people understand that lines in the sand, there's some non-negotiables. Like, I really believe that the quality of your life is directly correlated to how tightly you hold the non-negotiables in your life. So if you let people around you gossip, if you let people around you give excuses, if you let people around you be whining about things as opposed to being, instead of using advancing language, well, you're going to have a goat rodeo going on every day. But on the other hand, if you're very firm and say, here's what I need from you, can I count on that? So, for instance, Nan, if you just stepped all over me, I can just say, hey, Nan, when you did that, it created this mess. I'd like to request that from now on you do this instead. Do I have your commitment? Now, that's a great way to go to someone, and 9 times out of 10, you're going to get a yes. If you get a no, you can go back into negotiation with the person and get whatever you can out of them, but at least they get, listen, this person's got a line in the sand.
But let's just talk a little bit about that fear that people have, because there is that element of, if I do that, there's those promotions, there's those dark side politics, there's other stuff that happens at work, and how realistic is that for me? And so that fear of, you know, sabotage or something else happening, how do we bridge that and just say, okay, I'm going to have these non-negotiables and take the consequences?
It's interesting. I just did one of my favorite things I get to do every year. I do a special course called the Permission to Be Extraordinary Summit. That's for top-level executives, and they all kind of come out of there saying it changed their life in a huge way. It's a pretty powerful session. We do an exercise where they get that the fear that they have so made up in their brain, and it's so takes away their ability to move ahead and make things happen. And that's, you know, not just not for executives. That's for all of us. We make up stuff in our brains. One of our organizations, it was actually a bank in Tennessee, and I got a call from the CEO, who happens to be a female CEO, who said, now I know that our organization has really achieved greatness in terms of our culture, because the other day I'm in the stall in the restroom, and one of the tellers saw that I didn't have nylons on, and according to our dress code, it wasn't the time of the year where I was allowed to not have nylons on, so she called me tight on it. And she said, now I know I have a great organization. And she was thrilled that the teller called her on that. So part of it is, you know, being a sane leader. Part of it is teaching leaders how to be sane. But part of it is getting people to understand that they have a moral obligation to call tight the people around them to do the right thing.
So let's say I'm a supervisor manager of a small group of people in an organization that has its own culture, but I want to create my own pocket of excellence, and I don't want to wait for all those things to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something that I can be doing besides what we've been talking about in terms of language and those non-negotiables and some of the behaviors, some other things that I could be doing to help create the fact that it's safe here to kind of show up and be who you are, and we are going to operate in a different way to have passion and ignite those results. Any tips for me?
Absolutely. The place to start is nothing impresses people more than results. And so if you're creating results in your workplace, people, you have people's ear. And so, you know, what we teach people to do, and part, we have a whole system that we take organizations through. So, you know, it's not just about the language. I mean, that's where we start. But the system has to do with taking the components, the critical drivers of the organization, and what you do is you teach some people some basic skills in it, and you begin to measure and celebrate, coaching along the path, and you bring it up to the point that they're getting close to a 10 on a 1 to 10 scale in that area, all through this hoopla and fun and celebration of the results, because once they understand how to perfect one area, they start raising the bar for themselves in other areas. Which then, if you remember the old Ed Sullivan shows where the plates would go up in the air on the stick, you add the next plate. And so you begin to measure the next thing, and then the next thing, and then the next thing. And so, you know, we've had so many organizations that have doubled and tripled their size. You know, it can be done with anybody within any organization, but it's about deciding what are the things that drive the results of the organization. So can I just give you an example, Nan,
sure,
of kind of how we would do that? Everybody has a phone. And so what you can do is you can have your people who answer the phones be measured on it. And so you can have a mystery shopper call in and see if they're meeting the 10 different parameters of how they should be answering the phone, of using the customer's name and asking how else they can help and making sure they have a great amount of energy in their voice and whatever other elements are important to you as an organization. So when those shops come in at the end of the week, then the managers can look at those, coach their people, but then you turn it into a ruckus, fun, playful thing where you have little, you know, balloons or buttons or something, and it's amazing how adults will behave to win some little thing along with the recognition. Everybody wants to win the game of life. And so even though they act like they don't want those things, it begins to shift the behaviors. And then once you handle, you know, you get your phones down, then you can start to work on other things as well, because now they understand, gosh, this is not just lip service. They expect us to really shift behaviors, and we're up to the game. This is going to be a hoot.
And what do you hear or see, I guess, in the work that you do around this whole sense of authenticity? And if a manager or supervisor is not somebody who is into balloons and fun games, but they do it because someone told them to do it, does that affect the results here? I mean, is there a need to kind of go with your own style? And that's an example. Or you really do need to have this sort of outrageous, you know, let's refocus on something that is enjoyable and encouraging and fun.
That's a both and, man. You know, they have to be authentically matched to who they are. So you can't do something and come off disingenuous. That's never going to work. On the other hand, I'll never forget, I was speaking at a conference one time of CEOs, and everybody was revering this one CEO for being so far above the rest of them in performance. And, of course, when I finished speaking, he was the first one up, and he said, "You are so right in this stuff." He said, Every quarter I do an all-employee session, and the last one, he said, I dressed up as Rocky, and I paid $10,000 for a live feed that went into the room, and I'm running up these stairs and jumping up and down. I've got the hood over my head, and I break through the back door then, and I come running through so they can see me off the IMAGs. Now I'm coming down actually in person. They still don't know who I am. I go to the front of the room, and I throw back my hood, and they see that I'm the Rocky. And he said, and these are the stupid things I need to do to be a high-performing CEO. So there is a little bit of that, man, where we have to come out of ourselves because we're asking others to come out of their comfort zone.
Well, obviously, we've just touched the surface on all the great things that are in your book and a lot of the work that you do in terms of transforming cultures. So Roxanne, if people want to find out more about your speaking, your consulting, your company, your book, how do they do that? Where would they find you?
Well, they can go a couple different places. They can go to the thankgoditsmonday.com site. They can type in roxanneemrick.com. They can call in here on the 800 number, which is 236-5885. But I would recommend people go to the site and sign up for a free weekly newsletter, because that newsletter you can take into your workplace and you can listen with your work team. It takes 1 minute every Monday morning to get some of these ideas to shift your culture. And I'm getting reviews from people all over the country saying it's really shifting the results of organizations. And all that's for free as well.
And that's on the thankgoditsmonday.com website?
That's on the thankgoditsmonday.com website and many organizations as well. Buy the book in bulk. I think that's why it was on the New York Times bestseller list for so long, was because groups were buying it in bulk. Work the book together.
That's thankgoditsmonday.com if you want to get that tip for every Monday morning with your group or a lot of additional information. Or you can go to Roxanne's website, which is roxanneemrick.com. The book, Thank God It's Monday, How to Create a Workplace You and Your Customers Love. My guest today, Roxanne Emmerich. And Roxanne, any just last-minute tip that you would leave us as we wind up this segment?
Yeah, I would just say that if you're discouraged, and I know that most people listening are, that decide that you're not alone and that you can do something. You are not a victim. It's happened over and over and over again for 20 years where these dramatic changes can happen. And so if you're thinking yours is the only place where that can happen, there's a pretty good likelihood that might be wrong. So step in, be courageous, and be a leader in shifting your culture because it doesn't take the title. I've seen receptionists do it. I've seen the guy in the parking lot doing it. Just by being of this extreme character and showing others how to be, you can shift your results around you.
I think that's great advice, and I've seen the same thing that happens as well. So I would encourage people to check out all your great information. The book, again, Thank God It's Monday, the author, Roxanne Emmerich. Roxanne, thanks again for spending time with us here on Work Matters. It was a pleasure to have you as a guest.
Thank you so much, Nan. Take care.
We'll be right back. We're going to take a quick break. Job loss is loss. Like significant life events you do not choose, this sudden, unwanted life occurrence can diminish self-esteem, rip apart well-being, tap deep fears, and flatten you for weeks, months, or even years. If you want to tap into your resilience, reconnect with your core, and find your inner strength, you're going to want to check out my brand new seminar, Rebooting After Job Loss. If you want to gain insights from the past that will direct your future and make finding a job easier, check out my new seminar, Rebooting After Job Loss. You can find out more information at rebootingafterjobloss.com. Love to see you there. Welcome back to Work Matters. I'm Nan Russell. You know, we've been talking about employee engagement and the importance of that in our workplaces, both as individuals and as a collective, and what that does not only to the productivity here in the United States and the elements of creative innovation and service, but we've been talking about it from a lot of other vantage points. And I just want to put my two cents in here as we talk about engagement. I do a lot of work with clients. I work on what I call winning cultures, which is a concept about only when we're all winning do we truly all win. And how do we create those kinds of cultures where people can show up and do their best work? The simple answer to that is there's three components that are necessary to do that. And that is really a foundation of trust and communication and authentic trust in a workplace. And that one needs to be able to give trust before you can get it. And that there's a lot of misconceptions about what trust is and isn't. And the third has to do with really showing up and being authentic and having a vulnerability and a authenticity that comes with that. So those are kind of some key components to doing that, but that's about the individual level, the manager, supervisor, individual employee level. And I want to talk for a minute about the broader concepts. I wrote a column on this actually recently. You can find it by going to my personal website, nanrussell.com. That's nanrussell.com. And I have an article out that's called You Don't Need an Expert. And it talks about this whole concept of no one needs to tell us that there's a problem at work. All we need to do is look around and see it. And I talk about some of the things that one can do. There's a couple that I want to mention outside of those three that I just gave you. First is to recognize, you know, this is not an HR issue. This is not about the program of the month. This is not about bringing some consultant in to change things in a day. This is not about all of those things. This is about a way of thinking, a way of living, a way of being in that culture. And it starts as simply as this. When we have workplaces that say, if you are a leader or a company and you have something that says your employees are your biggest assets, then here's my advice to you. Either take that down that sign or stop saying that or make it true. Because part of what has occurred is for employees to feel like, you know what, we are not your biggest asset. You are cutting our salaries. You are cutting our staffs. You are not enabling us to do our best work. The second thing that I would say about engagement right now has to do with this. We've got to stop the finger pointing. It's not their fault in management. It's not our fault as employees. I've been on both sides of the desk for a long period of time, and I can tell you we are equally responsible. And the other thing that I would have a very strong point of view about is the fact that if you are not engaged at work, it is not your boss's fault. It's not your supervisor's fault. It's your fault. Find out a way to be engaged, volunteer, do some other work, do something else that uses your gifts and opportunities, and show up and try and do your best work. Because ultimately, you're the person who has to create your own future. You're the person. We need to be in this together. There needs to be the side that says we need to create the right cultures, but we also need to say, yeah, but we're all responsible for that. And finally, I would say we need to own our piece of that. We need to understand that if we're a supervisor, we might be doing some things that are causing disengagement in our staff. And we might, you know, this is not intentional. I don't think people are out intentionally trying to hurt individuals that they work with in a way that makes them less productive. That doesn't help anyone, but there are some things that we could be doing a lot better. and asking ourselves if some of those emails we're sending, some of the ways that we're escalating demands, might be shutting down people on the other side. And on that other side of the desk, ultimately, you don't work for anyone other than yourself. And what are you contributing to that culture? What are you doing to ensure that disengagement doesn't cost your job or someone else's job? So it's a two-sided coin. I would encourage you to check out my latest column called You Don't Need an Expert. Coming up on next week's show, my guest is Chuck Martin. He has a new book called Work Your Strengths. Remember, you can get lots more information about the show by going to the show's website, workmatterswithnan.com. That's workmatterswithnan.com. As always, it is such a pleasure to spend time with you here on Work Matters. I hope you have an absolutely terrific week, because your work does matter. Take care. Bye for now.